Now, what we can do is, let's talk about the technique, the phenomena, the magnificence of anchoring. Anchoring is a very, very widely used NLP skill. It's incorporated on some level in almost all the techniques. And so this is a skill that I would really invite you to focus on and to get really good at. It's really powerful stuff. So the idea with anchoring, you remember Pavlov's dogs, okay? Ivan Pavlov, he was researching the digestive and nervous system of different animals. So they were researching at the time the digestive system of dogs. And so, long story short, what they would do is it was actually meat powder. They present meat powder to the dogs, and the dogs would salivate, and they would measure how much salivation that the dogs would produce. And fairly soon into this process, they noticed that the dogs would start to salivate when the researcher walked into the room. So the dog was anticipating what was coming and would start to salivate. So they thought, well, that's interesting. What else could we pair that response with? So they did bells, buzzers, tones, those kinds of things, so that they could pair presenting the meat powder, which would evoke the state of salivation or the behavior of salivation, and then they would ring a bell at the same time. So in the dog's mind, those two experiences got paired in the dog's neurology. So whenever they would ring the bell, the dog would salivate, even if there was no meat present. So they were able to, this is the realm of classical conditioning, behavioristic psychology, an entire field of psychology built around this idea of classical conditioning and operant conditioning. So that's partly what's going on with anchors, is what we're doing is we're pairing an internal state with some stimulus of some kind. So that whenever that stimulus is present, it evokes the state automatically, unconsciously, just like the ringing of the bell and the salivation. Now the good news is, and the cool thing is, that we as human beings have sophisticated neurology. We're able to make these associative connections very, very quickly. It's partly how we learn. It's how we learn, for example, when I see the word cat, I know what that is. I have an association with that, and I see Commander Riker in my head. Okay? So I have an associative connection with that. You could think of it as a kind of an anchor. And that's how we learn. We associate one thing with another. We know, for example, like, as little children, we learn how to open doorknobs, right? We learn how to open doors. And then we generalize that to all doorknobs or different ways of opening doors. So it's not like you have to learn over again how to open a door every time you encounter a door. You've got an association there. You know how to do it. You see one of those things, you touch one of those things, you know what to do. So anchoring is essentially, you know, part of the process of how we learn anything. And it's a very cool thing. Now, we talked about being able to access a state, to call up a state in all those fun different ways that we went over. And so now it's like, okay, I'm thinking to myself, if I wanted to be in a certain state at a certain time or in a certain context, wouldn't it be cool if I could pair that state with something in the context so that that state would show up automatically? So in youth corrections, I thought to myself, well, what state do I want to be in when I'm working with the guys in that facility? And I thought, well, I want to be calm, I want to be confident, and I want to be cheerful. That's really how I wanted to be going to work, calm, confident, and cheerful. So after I learned how to anchor, what I did is I would call up that state of calmness. I would put myself in a wonderful state of calmness. And then I would picture the door of the living center in my mind. I'd bring up that state of confidence, and as that feeling was on the rise, then I'd picture the door. And I'd call it up again and picture the door until I had made an associative connection between the image of that door and my being calm. And then you check it out. You test it just by picturing the door and see if it evokes that feeling of calmness. And then I did the same thing with confidence, same thing. It's the exact same process, exact same stimulus. And then I did it with cheerfulness. So we did what we call stacking anchors. I stacked several states onto the same stimulus so that whenever I saw that door, I instantly felt calm, confident, and cheerful. And there's also some magic that happens when you blend states together. Sometimes things emerge out of them that is more powerful than having the states separately. So I had to go through that door every day going to work. So how useful is that? I have to see the door to get to work, and I walk through the door calm, confident, and cheerful automatically. I didn't have to pause and do a ritual or, you know, cleanse my chakras or anything. I just walk through the door calm, confident, and cheerful automatically. The other element around anchoring that inspired Richard Bandler and Grinder to do this was modeling Milton Erickson. And this is really the structure of post-hypnotic suggestion. So post-hypnotic suggestion, where a hypnotist, Milton Erickson, would suggest that something would happen in the future and the person would have some automatic unconscious response to it. So he might say something like, how surprised, like with this, another youth corrections examples. They brought this one kid to Erickson and he had all kinds of behavior problems and wanted to bring him to see if Erickson would work with him. And there was he was teaching some other people. So he made the kid wait for a long period of time while he was watching Erickson work with all of these other people. So this kid's building up this kind of anticipation that Erickson's going to change him somehow. And so finally, when they bring the kid in front of Erickson, Erickson says, why have you brought him to me? And so they read off his rap sheet, you know, of all these bad behaviors kind of a thing. And he just looks at the kid meaningfully and says, how surprised will you be when your behavior totally changes next week? And then he says, take him away. And that's all he said. Lo and behold, next week, the kid's behavior completely changed. And it was because what he did is he used language that presupposed that the kid's behavior would change. What was called into question is, how surprised would he be? Would he not be surprised or would he be totally surprised? Either way, the behavior changes. So he set it up as a post-hypnotic suggestion. And the kid was probably anticipating all week long, waiting to see if and when his behavior would change and how surprised would he be. So it's partly based on the structure of post-hypnotic suggestion so that we can evoke a state in a future context. And there's lots of different ways to do it. You can pair a state visually, like I mentioned with the seeing of the door. And it could be a picture outside of you, or it could be a picture inside of you. You can pair it to something auditory. It could be a word or a phrase or a tone, a sound, something like that. A little bit like we did with Sebastian, so that anchor, when he hears that tone, that chime, that it evokes a whole process of getting to sleep. So it becomes a kind of anchor. It can also be kinesthetic. We do a lot with kinesthetic anchors in NLP where you invite a state in somebody. Like if I said to somebody, oh, you know what, I ran into some friends of yours the other day and they had some really interesting things to say about you. What state do you think they would go into if I said something like that?
Anticipation.
Anticipation?
Curiosity.
Curiosity? Wouldn't you be curious? Wouldn't you be curious about what they said? You know? So using my sensory acuity, I watch curiosity unfold. I said, yeah, they had some really interesting things to say about you, and touch the arm. Now, if I've done it well, as that state's on the rise and I touch the arm and I make that connection between the state of curiosity and that touch, now later, if I want to invite that state of curiosity back, I can touch and say, you know, I've got some really interesting things I'd like to share with you. Touch the arm, evoke the state of curiosity, and now they're more likely to be receptive to what I might be offering. So that's an example of a kinesthetic anchor, of using a touch of some kind. There's also spatial anchors. So how many of you have gone from like one room to another and you forgot why you went in there? Kind of a thing? Yeah. So what do? You go back in the other room, right? Yeah. And at some point you go, ah, That's what it was, you know. And back you go. And it's likely that you went back to the very spot where you had the thought of what you were going to do when you went into the other room. And it became spatially anchored to that spot. Okay? So you go back and it re-evokes that thought or that feeling of what you were going to do. Yeah, because it works.
She would go back to where she was.
Yeah.
Well, Bill Cosby does a whole thing on that.
Yeah.
So the memory is right here.
Oh.
You go here, you forget, and then you go back here and you go, oh, I remember.
Halfway. Yeah. Great example. You know, that so spaces can be anchors. And so we're going to explore this afternoon a couple of processes that use spatial anchors, and it's very widely used throughout NLP, how to create a space that will hold that state stable. It's another meaning of the term anchor, just like a ship's anchor that would hold a ship in a ship's floating around on the surface of the water, put down an anchor, it'll keep it in a certain zone. So we use anchors in NLP to hold states stable. The reason we do that is because we want to have two experiences happen in their experience at the same time. So if you can hold one state stable and another state stable so that they experience them both together, that's what makes the association, the associative connection. There's a phrase in neuroscience that says, neurons that fire together, wire together. Neurons that fire together, wire together. And so we want to be able to fire the neurology of one state with another kind of an experience so that they pair, so that when one shows up, the other shows up. So that's the basis for anchoring. Some of the elements, sometimes people will say, well, how long does an anchor last? How stable is an anchor? Well, some can be extremely stable. They can last a lifetime. You could think of phobias as a kind of anchor, where a person has an intensely scary experience, and oftentimes a one-time very scary experience, and then every other similar experience like that takes them back to the original feeling. And that can last forever, unless they do something to shift it. But sometimes these are the factors that would determine how stable that anchor was. So the intensity of the state, how much of the state did you get? The purity of the state is another one. The cleaner the state, the more separate a state, the better the anchor. Sometimes in NLP we use the language of a muddied anchor. And that's where, for example, if I wanted to anchor something to a handshake, if I shake somebody's hand and I set the anchor that, how often do you think he shakes somebody's hand in different contexts with different feelings, things like that? There's going to be too much mixing going on, not only with uniqueness of the anchor, but also the purity of the state. It's going to evoke lots of different states, and they're going to be mixing. So we want to have clean states as much as we can. The timing of the anchor has to do with this little diagram here. So let's say you're just in whatever state you were in at the moment, then something happens and your state shifts. So the new state comes on the rise. And depending on how intense it is, it may take a little longer to get to the peak of the state. And again, that could be confidence or curiosity or calmness or some other resourceful state. So we want to catch it when the state is on the rise. And the general suggestion is about 2/3 to the peak is good timing to set your anchor. And then to hold the anchor just over the peak so that you're getting this zone of the state, so that it's still on the rise, not quite the peak, and a little bit past the peak. And then you're going to get the association with, there's a little bit of time delay in states. States are neurochemical in nature. So they come on slowly and they leave slowly relative to other ways of processing, like with sound or sight. Those can switch instantly. But feelings oftentimes don't switch instantly. They might switch. It takes a little while for the neurochemistry to shift. So that's why we start the anchor here. If you start the anchor here, you're likely to get closer to the peak of the state because of that little neurochemical delay. So that would be the ideal timing of an anchor. The uniqueness of the anchor is very important. So if for example, I was doing a kinesthetic anchor and I do something very unique and unusual, like if I want to have really clear processing, really clear memories, and I use this touch on my forehead. Now, I don't do that very often in my world, touch my forehead right in that spot with that pressure, that duration right there. So that would be a pretty unique anchor. It's unlikely that that anchor is going to be accidentally fired, that somebody's going to walk up to me and like poke me right in the forehead like that, or that I'm going to accidentally poke myself in the forehead. Much more likely to accidentally poke myself in the eye than poke myself in the forehead like that. And then the accuracy of duplication. So if I touch that spot in the exact place, the timing, the duration, and all of that, so that it's that accuracy of duplication, I'm doing it the same way each time, it's going to be a more stable anchor than if I, you know, touch over here, or I do it much longer or much less, or a different kind of pressure. So we want to have accuracy of duplication as well. So you think of these, you know how like we had the well-formedness conditions for outcomes on the first day? These would be the well-formedness conditions for setting an anchor. All right. Questions?
Could you go over again one time the difference between purity and uniqueness?
Yeah. So purity of the state has to do with, for example, if I had, what would be a good one? So like the, okay, so I'll use a presenter as being a presenter. So it might be a mix of, like I might have a mix of excitement about sharing something, but I might also be a little nervous about it. I might also be a little bit tired because I didn't sleep well the night before, which was true of the first day of our training together. So I was a little bit tired. So I had that mix going in. Now, if I wanted to access a resource state to help me with that, I would want something that's more like just purely high energy or something like that, so that it's not mixed with other things. So that's the purity of the state, whereas the uniqueness of the anchor has to do with, like if I did an auditory anchor, like a snap kind of a thing, but if I vary it, or if it's a sound that I make a lot, that's not a very good example. So the uniqueness of the anchor, that's unique. It's not something that's likely going to happen a lot through the day, or is going to be accidentally fired or something along those lines.
Thank you. Purity of the state also can be like being very specific about the state. If you want to anchor a state, or you're talking to someone, you ask them, what would you like to anchor? And they say, well, I want to feel good. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just too big. You need something more specific about what you're going to anchor. So it's like, well, maybe I want to feel, like you said, excited. But, use something specific, and it's also good to choose a context in which you would like to feel that state in. And so that gives it more specificity. And the more specific you are, the more powerful the anchor will be.
Yeah. We have, lots of different anchoring processes for being able to connect a state to a context. So again, just being in the context, the state will appear. So that you don't like have to get into the context and then fire your anchor. That's one way you could do it if you needed to. But wouldn't it be nice just to have the state show up in the context automatically? Kind of like I did with the door of the living center where I worked. So, yeah.
Can you explain the timing of the anchor with the example?
Let me demonstrate one. Would you be willing to come up? Okay.
I had a quick question about the door. So when you would see the door, would you go into the state without thinking about, or would you see the door and remember, oh, I created a state for this, and then become the state? Is it mindful, or is it just kind of like happening?
It can be either. It could be a reminder, like I see it and I would consciously remember that I did that. Sometimes it's intended to happen unconsciously, that I wouldn't necessarily. But it could happen and still be effective either way. Kevin?
Notes that with your anchor stacking on your door, what he basically did was unleash a new behavior generator on that.
Uh-huh.
It's constantly a new behavior generator that triggers the door.
Right.
I feel confident when I go through that door. When I see that door, my behavior comes up is feeling confident, feeling calm, basically cheerful. That's a new behavior generator. You just did that. You can do that too.
Right. That work really well together. So let's just experiment a little bit as partly a way of answering your question, because I think it's really good for everybody. So may I ask, do you have children?
Mm.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you love your children?
A lot.
Okay. So like if...
I
yeah.
I do too.
Uh-huh.
She's 15 now.
Yeah. So what's it like when you're with them?
I just feel at bliss when she's behaving. When
mm-hmm.
she's not,
uh-huh.
I'm angry.
Sure. So... thinking of a time when you were with her, when you felt that great love for her. Be there in that experience, seeing what you see, hearing what you heard, feeling that love that you feel for her. Okay. Notice what that's like as you feel it in your body. Okay. All right. So, big deep breath. Okay, so now, what did you notice in terms of, all I wanted to do was have her do this. Okay. So did you observe that her state shifted, that it went up it for a little while, and then there was the... So it kind of went up, and then there was a drop, and then I asked her to take a deep breath. Now, what did you observe in terms of sensory acuity? As the state, like what did you notice difference in terms of the rise, the peak, and the fall? Uh-huh.
She
Mm-hmm. Right. What else? So there was definitely stuff going on in the eyes.
The posture.
Mm-hmm. And that would probably go along with
the breathing.
Right? Okay. Definitely a shift in the breathing. So now we're going to do this again. I'm going to invite you to go back into that experience with her, okay, and being there, that's it. And really feel what it feels like to be with her in that loving way, the way a mom loves her child, okay? And now notice how the state is stable, okay, as I'm holding the anchor, okay? And then another deep breath. So notice how now she goes up into the state and it held there for a bit. Until we released. So I watched until I calibrated the first time to see what it looked like to go to the peak and then down. So I kind of had a sense for where to catch it as she was going up.
I got it.
Yeah.
So once I had this feeling almost at peak, I felt inside when you touched it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how, now you know with the practice, how do I know?
Yeah. So it's the sensory acuity. It's watching and noticing. As if you just catch it as the state is on the rise, it's going to be a pretty good anchor. I mean, getting it at 2/3, that's getting really fine line, right? But if you catch it as it's on the rise, that's going to be good. And that's where you just notice state is shifting, okay? And then see if you can notice when it peaks or when it shifts, that kind of a thing, and just catch it while it's on the rise. And so whatever you're paying attention to, whether it's the eyes, the breathing, skin color change, those kinds of things. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Did you notice that?
Yes.
So does that make sense as far as the timing of the anchor? Now, if you're doing a kinesthetic anchor, the quality of the touch is also important. You know, I've seen new NLP practitioners there, and they're like, you know, gotcha, you know, kind of a thing. Waiting for that state, and then they like grab them, you know, poke them, things like that. And so you don't want the anchor to disrupt what they're experiencing. In fact, if you do it well, they may not even notice the anchor at all because they're going to be really present to their experience. So it's gentle. Some of the guidelines is like, if you go into the grocery store and you squeeze a peach to see how ripe it is, okay, you don't like squish it. Right, and put it back. Okay, some avocados. But it's a gentle squeeze. And if you touch and then you gently squeeze it a little bit more as the state's on the rise.
Okay. But it was warm.
Yeah.
I felt that.
Yeah, so that you could even have probably an association with the warmth of the touch. That might be part of the anchor itself. So that's some other guideline for a kinesthetic anchor. In a moment, we're going to practice a spatial anchor using the circle of excellence process, which I think you're going to love. And it's the same kind of thing when you, as the person's going into their state, as it's on the rise, you invite them to step into the circle, and we'll demonstrate and you'll get to practice this one. Other questions?
When else would you want to use the kinesthetic anchoring? Besides, you know, when you were saying like, the curiosity thing and like, oh, I have something that I'd like to tell you about, and you like anchor them back into being curious, I understand that one. But like in a situation when you're like, you know, coaching a client or working with somebody, how would that be helpful? Is it like if they get into a state where that anchored state would be resourceful, then you would like give them the anchor so they could get back into it?
Well, there's many, many, many ways to do it. We'll talk about like different application. Like if you're doing a certain NLP processes, it's built into the process. Sometimes if you're just helping them be resourceful, my little example would be called a covert anchor because they weren't consciously aware of what I was doing. But you can also do it very overtly. It doesn't have to be covert. You can very overtly say, we're gonna help you get resourceful, and I'm gonna use this process of anchoring, and you tell them what you're doing. And you go ahead and do the whole process. And then they learn something too. You know, they can learn to anchor themselves. You can even have them anchor themselves. Like I could have had her put her hands on her heart to anchor that feeling of love so that whenever she puts her hands on her heart, she feels this great love for her children. And then she gets to take the anchor with her, and it has nothing to do with me.
Right.
Right? I don't have to be there for her to love her child. You know? So that's I'm giving you a lot of information about anchoring, but now it's time to practice.
Yeah.
So actually, one more demo before we practice. So another quick question?
Oh, yep. Well, yeah, as far as the demo goes, I just wanted to ask you if you are planning to today demonstrate a sliding anchor or if you might be willing to indulge me at some point.
I will indulge you at some point. Just for the sake of not overwhelm.
Okay.